All right, looks like we can start. Hi, everybody. When I heard that this was going to be in the big room, I was excited, but you guys are a little spread out, but that's okay. Can you hear me in the back? Excellent. Okay, can you see the screen? Oh, there I am. Cool. Okay. You've seen this before, but remember to fill out your evals. I'm very interested in your thoughts and comments on this session. My name is Robert Green. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft in the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group. My office is at corporate headquarters in Redmond. If you have any questions about this talk or anything I can help you with, please feel free to email me at rogreen@microsoft.com. There's my Twitter handle. I'd love to be able to discuss this stuff with you in the future. I did want to say that this talk is essentially module 3 of something called the Enterprise Dev Camp, which was a full day of training we put together on this topic. So we're going to do the middle module of this where we move apps to the cloud, but there's two modules that come before, and there's a couple modules that come after, and you can download the entire training kit at aka.ms/devcampstk, which looks like that. And you'll get all the sample code. You'll get the script that I'm going to be reading from for not only this module, but for the entire thing. So basically, the point of this talk is, you know, Microsoft is talking quite a bit about modern business applications. You know that we're a devices and services company. You've heard our new president talk about cloud first, mobile first. You know, so in a devices world, Windows 8, Windows Phone, there's been huge talk about how you build applications for a world of devices. And the question is, as a developer of enterprise line of business apps, whether we're in Windows Forms or WPF or et cetera, our question is, well, what has that got to do with me? And the purpose of this whole day of training and this talk in particular is to answer that question. Where do existing line of business applications fit into this devices and services story? Because obviously our answer is not, well, you have to throw out everything you have and rewrite it from scratch. That is not the answer. So what we're going to see is what you can do with your existing applications. Before we do that, let's just give a quick overview of our strategy. There's been a rapid evolution underway from the world of client-server to the world of devices and services. So basically the idea is, as you well know, everybody's got devices, everybody spends their whole time on devices. You know, this is what people do all day long, staring at their devices, and then they walk into things, they walk into other people, because with this device, always on, always connected, you have access to your information. So I want to be able to get to my Facebook feed, my Twitter feed, my Instagram. I want to be able to get my mail on this device. I am constantly checking my mail on this device. And if I can constantly check my mail on this device, or I can constantly check my social media, it seems like it's a short step away from saying, well, why can't I access my business data? Why can't I see what expense reports are waiting for my approval? Why do I have to be at work to approve an expense report? If I wake up in the middle of the night and I say, oh, I was supposed to approve that guy's expense report, can't I pick up my device, whether it's as small as this or as large as my laptop, and do that? Can't I see what my sales are? Can't I see what my customers are reporting? Why shouldn't I be able to see at moment's notice what machines are down on the factory floor? So the whole point of a devices and services world is not just to build apps for the phone. It's not just to build apps for the tablet. It's to come up with an architecture where people can get to their information anywhere. And basically, if you can put the data and the services in the cloud, then people from any device and from essentially any programming language should be able to get to their data. Obviously, we focus quite a bit on mobility, but mobility also means that I can pick up this machine and go to Starbucks or go to the train station, and as long as I have access to the internet, I should be able to access not only consumer data, but also corporate data. So given that this is the world that we're moving towards, how are you going to react to it? Let's say you're the IT department. You've got three choices. You can do nothing, which is the easiest thing to do, but it doesn't really meet your customers' or your employees' needs. You can start from scratch. You can say, just because we spent millions of euros on this application that works perfectly well, it's only a WPF app, and that's not mobility, so let's rip it to shreds and let's start all over again. Well, that's not that great an idea either. And so the third option is to embrace the cloud. And what we're going to see over the next hour is that it's really not that hard to take an existing internal application and move it to the cloud and make it mobile. And of course, you get to do this at your own pace. Some applications you will completely rewrite. Our expense reporting system at Microsoft, many, many years ago, it was an Excel spreadsheet. Now, and since then, it's been an ASP.NET app that you can really get to internally, or you can get to through direct access if you happen to have a connection to the internet. But it's all web-based. There's no offline capabilities. That would be a great example of something that we probably should rebuild from scratch and make it into a literally a cloud-first, mobile-first type application. The application we're going to look at today is an expense reporting system written in WPF. You could tear it down and start from scratch, or you could keep it and just move it to the cloud. And you get to decide what pace you want to do that and where it makes sense. Okay, so a modern business app, what we're calling a modern business app, should be able to reach any device, should deliver fast performance, and it should extend to the cloud. And then, of course, you want in your tooling to be able to develop those applications really fast. Okay, so I'm going to move through these fairly quickly. The best experience on any device, whether it's a .NET application, which we're going to look at, whether it's a Windows Store application using C#, VB, XAML, or C++, whether you write it in HTML or JavaScript, eventually you might take it to cross-platform with the Xamarin tools, using Visual Studio, and using the cloud as a place where you store and host data and services. Some of the services, some of the data. In our example, we're going to have some of the data and services in the cloud. We're going to have all of the data in the cloud. We're going to have some of the services in the cloud, but we're also going to use some services internally. And then finally, it's all done through Azure. Okay. I don't want to spend too much time on that. What I want to do is get into the meat of it. So here's our example. Let's go take a quick look at it. I've got a WCF service that talks to expenses data sitting in a SQL Server database. And then I have a WPF application, which is written using view model, and it's got some of the code in portable class libraries. So here is our UI, which is in WPF. We've got a bunch of unit tests written for this. We've got some view models and models in a portable class library. We also have the repository code that talks to the WCF service in a portable class library. And then we've got our generic models in a portable class library. Okay, and then in the WPF application, there's views, there's view models, there's a navigation service. So this is a pretty heavy use of MVVM, and it's designed to be a reasonably good look at what a line of business app in WPF looks like. So if we run this, it talks to the WCF service talking to SQL Server. So this is all internal, WPF to WCF to SQL. It's pretty canonical. It's pretty standard of what people might be doing in internal line of business apps. Does this look familiar to people? Okay. So now, here's our story. The app, as long as I'm on the corporate network, works great. I sit at my desk, or I can actually take this machine and go to the cafeteria as long as I'm on the corporate network. I can enter expenses, I can approve expenses. Works great. Now the question is, what if I want to be able to get to this information outside of work? Now I understand, you know, we talk about work-life balance. Why are you doing work if you're not at work? But that's kind of my choice. So here's the scenario. It's Friday afternoon. I see my manager. I say, hey, can you approve that expense report? Because some of that money's coming to me. My manager goes, yeah, I'll get to it. Weekend goes by. Week goes by. I see my manager next Friday. Hey, how about that expense report? My manager goes, oh, I forgot. I'll get to it Monday, I promise. Week goes by, right? You know what's going on here. What we want is, let's say it's Saturday, my manager's sitting in the coffee shop, and he suddenly remembers, happily, that he didn't approve my expense report. We'd like him to be able to, on his laptop, call up that application and talk to the data and the services, because it's just a WCF service, it's just a SQL Server database. If we could move that to the cloud, then we could enable him or her to get to that information from anywhere. Okay, so the first thing we want to do in this application is we want to move it to the cloud, improve accessibility, improve scalability, improve operations. In our scenario here, we're more interested in accessibility, being able to get to that data from anywhere. I don't know if internally we have a problem with our service and SQL Server scaling. Maybe the last Friday of the quarter, everybody in the company puts in all of their expense reports, so you might have some delay the last day of the month that Azure could potentially help with. But what we really want to do here is improve accessibility. So the first thing we need to do is get the data from internal SQL Server up to Windows Azure SQL, which is SQL Server running in Azure. And what we can do is migrate the database using SQL Server Management Studio and then just point the service to that database. So what we can do is come into SQL Management Studio. Here it is. Well, first thing we need, of course, is a SQL Azure database. So let's go to the Azure Management Portal. We'll go to SQL Databases. If you don't have one, you just click New, SQL Database, Quick Create, give it a name, choose your subscription. If you have multiple subscriptions, then they'll show up there. And then choose a server. If you've created a server, a database before, you'll already have database servers. Otherwise, you can create a brand new one. So I could say expenses, put it on this server, and click Create SQL Database, and Windows Azure will then create not only a database server for me, but also a database. So if you're starting from scratch, that's really easy. But I already have an existing database, which is this one right here, expenses. So there's charges, employees, expense reports. So I want to move this along with the data to Azure. So I right-click on this. I go to Tasks, Deploy Database to SQL Azure. I then connect to my SQL Azure server. And if we come back into the portal, I'm going to use this one here, AD8i, etc. And if I actually, let's use a different one because I already have an expenses database on that. Let's use this one here. And if I manage the server, I've got to set it up so I can get to it from this IP address. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want to make sure I know the name of this server. There it is right there. JD, etc. .database.windows.net. That's the name of this server. Oh, I can't copy that. All right, so I'm going to come back into SQL Management Server. Have I ever connected to this one? No. So what's it called? JDJE4 Pluxt. PLUXT. Oh! That's annoying. JDJE4 Pluxt. JDJE4 Pluxt. Dot. Database. I'm going to copy that because it's going to disappear. .windows.net. All right. Database.windows.net. I'm going to log in. I believe this is my password. I have a number of these servers, and I, at one point, set the username and password to the same thing for all of them. All right, wrong one. So let's pretend that it's this one, because I do know my username and password for this one. What? Login. Oh. And then I changed the password. There we go. So now I've connected. I'll create a database. I'll call it expenses tech days. I can choose a size between 1 gig and 5 gigs. This is pretty small data. I'll choose one. I'll say next, and I'll go. Now, because this is a fairly small database, it's going to go pretty quickly. Obviously, the bigger the database, the more time it takes. But this is now going to export the database, create the tables, and export the data up to SQL Azure. And this doesn't take very long, so we'll just let it run. Mm-hmm. What about collation? So SQL Azure is SQL Server running on Azure, so you know, you'd have to check to see if there are specific features that aren't supported, but in general it should be the same. I'm not that big an expert on what the differences are and what things aren't in there. Okay, so while this goes, we'll come to the management to SQL databases, come back here and look at the databases. Okay, so the database has been created. Is all the data there yet? Still packaging up the data. So we'll wind up with a database, and we're going to use this one for our example. So here's the expenses database up on SQL Azure, okay, along with the data. And if we wanted to, we could manage this. We'll have to log in. Come on. And, you know, we can run a query just to confirm that everything's in there. Select star from charges. And there's the data. All right, done. So now our expenses test is up there as well. So that's all it takes to move a SQL database to SQL Azure. So now all we really need to do is come into the WCF service and instead of pointing it at the internal database, point it at SQL Azure. Well, this application, we put the connection strings in a web in the web.config. And what I like to do is make a copy of this so that it's easy to switch from pointing to the internal one to the external one. Now what we need is the connection string. What's the connection string for a SQL database on Azure? Well, all you need to do is go to the portal and view the SQL database connection strings. There they are. So here's the ADO.NET connection string. I just copy that. Come back in here. And get rid of all that. Paste that in. Change the password, which I will change very soon, because I'm about to show it to you. Save this. And now, when I run this application, the WPF application, talking to the internal service, talking to the data sitting in SQL Azure. Okay? So I now have the data in the cloud, service local, data in the cloud, and I didn't have to change any code. All I had to do was point the WCF service to that SQL Azure database. Cool. Okay, well, we've got the service internal, and that's good, but maybe we want to move the service to Azure as well. Because that way, what we'll be able to do is it'll make it a lot easier to build multiple clients for this. Once you move the data to the cloud, and then you think about moving the service to the cloud, you're now in the devices and services world. Because remember, the whole point of devices and services is that you have the data and services in the cloud so that multiple devices can talk to it. So if we take that WCF service and put it in the cloud, then we're halfway there to now writing multiple front ends to talk to that. So we need some place to host this service. We need IIS in the cloud. The easiest way to do it is to create an Azure website and then publish the application and then have the WPF application point to that service sitting in Azure. Okay, well, let's go see that. Here's the WCF service, which is currently pointing to the SQL database. We need somewhere to put it. So let's come into the Azure portal. Let's go to websites. And if you don't have an existing website, you just click new, website, quick create, and we can call this, which ones do I already have? Let's back up a sec. Okay, I do have a tech days test. All right, well, we'll create a new one for our purposes here. Let's call it expenses, tech days. Put it in a region. Let's put it in, where are we? North Europe. Okay, that's probably closest to here. Create a website. Done. expensestechdays.azurewebsites.net. There we go. We have a website now on Azure that we can put things on, like the service. So let's come into this service, right-click on the service, choose Publish Website. Okay, then we click Windows Azure Websites, and it logs us in. It remembers who I am, so it doesn't prompt me for my username and password. And then it displays a list of all the websites that I have. And so we're going to select Expenses Tech Days. Click through here. If we want to see what files are going up there, we can start the preview. This will show us that pretty much all of the files are going to be sent up because we haven't published this there yet. And now we'll publish. And so what happens is Visual Studio packages it up, deploys it to Azure, and then all we need to do is say expense service, I believe it's called, SVC, or maybe it's called expenses service. Expense service. Oh. Probably help if I could spell. Even though I've done this demo 50 times, IE still does not know what I mean. So here's that WCF service now being hosted in Azure. And so now all we need to do is come into the client application, which is expenses, and we could redo the service reference, but what we did to make it easier is we put that in the app config. So I'm going to make a copy of the one that points to the local service, and then I'm just going to paste in the pointer to the service running in Azure. And now when I run this application, I have a WPF application running locally, talking to the WCF service in the cloud, talking to SQL data in the cloud. This is devices and services, isn't it? If you think about it, devices and services, again, it's not just about these. It's not just about what we consider devices. A device is anything running, in our case, Windows, or it could be anything running another operating system. Devices and services really means that a computer can talk to the data in the cloud. So now I can take this computer and I can go anywhere. I can go down the street to the coffee shop or sit on an airplane as long as the GoGo in-flight service works, which when you fly from Seattle to Amsterdam, they don't have, by the way. But as long as I have internet, then I can get to that corporate data in the cloud. So I've now cloud-enabled this application without changing a single line of code. All I did was change two config files, one in the service to point to SQL Azure, one in the application to point to the WCF service hosted in Azure. I didn't have to rewrite my WCF services web API. I didn't have to change my architecture at all. I haven't changed a line of code in the actual WPF application. It's now cloud-enabled. Okay. So we have corporate data sitting in the cloud that anybody can get to as long as they know the URL of the service. Isn't this wonderful? And at some point, your boss says, let me get this straight. You put corporate data in the cloud and anybody can get to it. You have until the checks are printed next time to fix this, or your name won't be on the list. Okay. So obviously we need to figure out some way of authenticating. We want to be able to prove that people are who they are. We want to be able to restrict access. Okay, what are our options? We can create our own database of usernames and passwords, and maybe we could use something like the ASP.NET membership provider or whatever, even the old version or the new version. But if you think about it, you already have a database of usernames and passwords in your organization. You probably are using Active Directory. Or you could use the Microsoft account or Facebook or Google or any of the other providers. But this is a corporate situation, so what we really want to do is leverage the Active Directory. So what we're going to use is Windows Azure, or it's actually now Microsoft Azure, Azure Active Directory. Now you can set up an Active Directory in Azure, and you can have it sync to your on-premises Active Directory. So you don't have two different unrelated versions. What you do is you have your on-premises Active Directory be the master, which of course it is, and then that syncs to Azure. So what we want to do is take advantage of Azure Active Directory. And what that's going to give us is token acquisition. So when I want to call a service, I'm going to authenticate against Active Directory and get a token back. Those tokens can be cached so that I don't have to log in every single time. And then there'll be an automatic refresh. I think tokens expire after about 30 minutes. But as long as it's the same session, they automatically refresh. Okay, so what we need to do is create a directory in Azure, add users, then we need to create a service application which represents the actual service. Then we're going to have to update the WCF service using those settings, and that, what that basically does is this, we identify, configure the service so that it requires authentication. Then we create a client application in Active Directory which is going to represent people trying to get to that service, and then add some code to the client to have it request the token, get it back, and then pass that along with any service calls. Okay? And for this, we are going to have to write some code. All right. So where are we in the demo? All right. So let's go to the Azure portal. We scroll down to Active Directory. Typically what you would do is you would add a directory. You could call it whatever you wanted. Tech Days, give it a domain. Tech Days, select a country or region. We are in... Where's in Netherlands? No, somebody already has Tech Days. Tech Days RO Green. I bet nobody has that. There we go. So I'll grab Tech Days RO Green, create that directory. Okay, that is now created. Just a tip for you guys. At the moment, in the portal, you cannot delete Active Directory tenants. So if you're playing around with it like I have, every time I do this demo, I create a brand new one. There's no way in the portal right now to delete them. So if you're not charged for them if you're not using them, but just be aware that at the moment, you can't delete these. You can delete a website. If you're playing around with websites, you could say, oh, I don't need this anymore, so I'll just delete it. There, the website's going and will soon be gone. There, the website's gone. You can delete a database very easily. Which one? I'm not going to need this one because we're not really using it. So expenses, tech days, we're going to use expenses. So I can delete that database. And you can actually delete database servers if there aren't databases on them. But there's no way at the moment to delete Active Directory. So if you're going to play around with it a lot, it's probably best to reuse them as opposed to constantly create new ones. Okay, so now I have this tech days tenant. Now what I need to do is add users. And so for our purposes here, I'm going to add a user. R.O. Green, and notice that it's R.O. Green at techdays, rogreen.onmicrosoft.com. And we're going to need that when we log in. So I'm going to, it'll be on the next screen that I can actually paste it. So Robert Green, create a temporary password. And I want, this is what I want. So I want that, which I'll put in Notepad because we're going to need it later on. And then I'm going to need this temporary password. Okay, so now I've created a user. And when we require authentication, I'm going to be able to log in as that user and access the service. Okay, and if you're doing this for real in your real organization, what you would do is not sit here and add all the users. You would sync between your on-premises Active Directory and this one. But for our purposes, this will work. Okay, the next thing we need to do is we're going to create an Active Directory application. So if we go to Applications, when we say add an application, first thing we'll notice is there's two choices here. If I say add an application for my organization to use, this shows us the Azure store. There are a whole bunch of applications existing that you can use. But what we really want for our purposes here is an application that we're building ourselves. So I'll add an application my organization is developing. And I'm going to call it ExpensesWCF. My choice here is web application and or web API or native client application. I'm going to wind up creating one of each. But for now, I'm creating the application that represents the service. Then I need to give the sign-on URL and the app ID URI. And what those are is the address of our website, which, remember, is expensestechdays.azurewebsites.net. So I'm going to copy that, and I'm going to put that in here because we'll need it in other places. So that's not only the sign-on URL, but the app ID URI. Okay? All right, so now what I've done is I've created a service application in Active Directory that is going to be used to authenticate. Now what I need to do is go configure the service to require authentication. Because right now the service has no idea that I need authentication. It has no idea that I want authentication. It has no idea where to expect tokens from. Right now, just because I created that service application, that's got nothing to do with the service. So what we're going to do in the service is we're going to update it to look for authorization tokens. And if a token doesn't exist, then it's going to return unauthorized. So to do that, we need to add some code. We'll add that to app.code, and happily I have all of this code pre-written. And we're going to add bearer token message inspector, because we're going to be using bearer tokens, right? And then what I need are a couple of references. I need a reference to system.identitymodel.services, and I need a reference to system.net.http. Okay. All right. And if we look in this bearer token message inspector, we're going to see that we're actually going to wind up replacing this with our real site. Okay. And then what we need is the name of our tenant here, which I believe is expenses tech days, right? No, tech days are O green, sorry. So we fill in where our service is and where our tenant is, okay? All right, now we're going to be working with JWTs or JSON Web Tokens, so we need to add some code for that. And so what we're going to do is come into the Package Manager, and we are going to install package system.identitymodel.tokens.jwt, and we want a specific version for this. We want 1.0.0. So we'll go and grab that NuGet package. Now, you might say, oh, well, that's really cute, but why didn't you do this? Why didn't you manage NuGet packages, come in here, and search for JWT, and get the JSON Web Token Handler for the Microsoft .NET framework? The reason is because when we wrote this code, we were using 1.0.0, and in the meantime, these guys updated it and it broke our code. So we could have changed our code. We didn't do that. We could have gone and yelled at these guys. We didn't do that either. So what I do is specifically here, and I've got that in the docs, I add the version that we know works. Well, one of these days we'll get around to making our code work with the later version. Okay. So you do have to be aware of that with NuGet. You can run into NuGet package hell. DLL hell is gone, but occasionally you can wind up in NuGet package hell. Okay, so in our bearer token code, we've changed this audience field to our website, this authority field to our tenant. Let's build this, make sure it works. Good. And then we need to do one more thing. Just go into web.config and add a behavior, bearer token required, which Visual Studio doesn't like, but it's still totally valid. And then we need to add some extensions, and what I'm going to do is copy that code because I don't really feel like typing it from scratch. It's all the way down on page 30. There. And that goes right here. So we add a behavior extension called bearer token required, which is this, and we call the bearer token extension element, which is sitting in app code. And that's this in here. And at this point, we've wired up the WCF service to expect a token. Now we need to republish it. Don't forget to do that, which I have before, and then wondered why it worked. Okay, so now let's republish this. Retest it. Notice that the test page looks different. That's a good sign because this is expecting authentication. So you get a different looking page. That's good. And now, when we run this, call out to that WCF service, make a call of it. Kaboom! System.servicemodel.security.messageSecurityException. The HTTP request is unauthorized with client authentication scheme anonymous. The authentication header received from the server was bearer, and we did not provide that. So we have now secured this service, and the good news is we're not going to be fired. Unless, of course, the problem is we've solved the problem of unauthorized access, but we've now broken the application and made it useless. So the next thing we'll do is fix the application. But that wasn't all that terribly difficult to lock down the service. Now what we need to do in the client is add the code that will go get that token and then pass it along every time it makes a request of the service. Okay? All right. So to do that, we're going to head out back to the portal. And what we're going to do is create another application. This time we're going to create a client application. So let's add an application my organization is developing. And this time we'll call it Expenses Client. And we're going to make it a native client application this time. The redirect URI, no big surprise, is where the service lives. Okay, client application has been added. And if we look at update your code, we see the redirect URI, and then we see this client ID. And we need that client ID because we're going to need to configure it in the service application, and we're going to need to pass it in our application. So let's copy that over into Notepad. Okay. All right. So now what we're going to do is pop back over to the service and can match it to the client. Okay. So to do that, we want to access web APIs, expose web APIs to other applications, which is how we expose this service to the client application. And this used to be a little bit easier to do. You used to not have to do this step. You used to be able to go into the client and point it directly to the WCF service, but the Azure Portal guys changed the way this works, and now you need to work with the manifest. So we manage manifest. We need to download the manifest, which is a JSON file. And we'll save this to the desktop. And remember that this is C65, because I've got a bunch of other ones there. Now we're going to open it. So this is the manifest for the server application. And notice, you know, we see the usual familiar website. There's a bunch of stuff in there. And at the moment, there are no permissions. So in other words, no one can talk to this. So what we want to do is add some permissions. And the code you need to write, which I'm going to go and grab from one of the other versions of this, looks like this. Where'd it go? Yeah. I closed the manifest. All right, let's open it up. This is the manifest we just downloaded, and I'm going to create these I'm going to replace this empty app permissions with this. So allow the application full access to the expenses WCF service, the display name expenses WCF service. I changed those. There was some boilerplate. I changed that. And then what we need to do is this permission ID is this client ID. So we just need to put in the client ID of the client service. And now what we've done was we have essentially made this service available to the client. Okay, so now we come back into the Azure portal. And we now upload the manifest, which is which one did we say it was? Is it the C65? 417.805 Pacific time. Yes, okay. Successfully uploaded manifest. Okay, now we pop over to the client and we say configure access to web APIs in other applications. So I want to be able to talk to other applications. I configure it now. There's our client ID. If we scroll down here, permissions to other applications. Now expenses WCF shows up in the list and I can give it permissions and save it. And now what I have done as far as Azure is concerned, I have given that client access to the service, assuming the WPF app now is smart enough to ask for a token and then pass it along. Okay, so now what we do is we come into the WPF expenses app and we need to add some code here. We need to update this application so that it acquires a valid token before it makes any WCF service requests. And we also need to make sure that any time it makes a request, it passes that token along with the request. Okay, so we're going to add a few pieces of code. And because this application is split up into various assemblies, we're going to add them in different assemblies. So the first thing we do in our model assembly, which again is a portable class library, is we add an existing piece of code. And the benefit of making this a portable class library is it's going to make it easier for us later on to create Windows Phone and Windows Store versions of this application that do the exact same authentication. So that code is in lab files, and we're going to add an interface iService authorizer, which has a method called getAuthorizationHeader. Okay. So now what we need is for this repository, which is what talks to the WCF service, to support that interface. So we're now going to add a piece of code here. Called authorized expense service client. And this authorized expense service client is going to be an instance of that proxy client that is smart enough to deal with authorization. Okay, so what we're going to do here is add an instance of the service authorizer. No, we already have one of those. Oh, okay, cool. I already added one. All right. Good. And I'm already passing it to authorized this. So as I was practicing this, it looks like I forgot to take out a couple pieces of code. But that's fine. So now what we want to do when this starts up, oh, it looks like I removed the wrong code. Uh-oh. Oops. No. That means I may have copied up the wrong code for you guys to wind up with. Good thing I noticed this. Okay, so let's go find the correct code. This is an authorized... Uh-oh. What did I do? Uh-oh. Well, happily, I have a backup copy of this. And they say you can never practice too much. Well, it turns out maybe you can. Because in all of my practicing, I appear to have broken this. Okay, I'm just going to extract this here. I apologize for this. Bear with me for a second. Any questions so far? And this code here is the hardest code we're going to write in the whole thing. I will say that our good friend Vittorio Bertocci and folks have spent a lot of time working on this authorization using OAuth and Active Directory. And I will say that they have focused very heavily on making it work well with Web API, have not focused quite so much making it work well with WCF. So it's a lot easier to do if you're using Web API. So if you're starting from scratch, you might make your services use Web API. If you have existing WCF services, you know, nobody necessarily wants to recreate existing services. So you can either slog along with the code we're doing here, or if you really wanted to use Web API, you could create a Web API front end to your WCF service, if you wanted to, and use the authorization for that, talk to the Web API authorized, which then is the only thing that can talk to the WCF service. Okay, so that code looked broken to me. No, it's not. Okay. I'm telling you, it is broken. But now I don't know why. All right, well, we'll just leave it like this. So I'm bringing in a service URL. There has to be private string underscore service URL, this dot underscore service URL equals service URL. We absolutely have to have that. Okay, so now this authorized expense service client takes the service URL, which is where our WCF service is, and an instance of this service authorizer class. Okay? All right. So now what we're going to do is now make changes to the WPF application. And what we want down in here is a NuGet package. Let's see if the one that's out here is really the one we want. And this is the Azure Active Directory Authentication Library. So we should be able to just search for ADAL, Active Directory Authentication Library. We actually want version 1.02, so I'm not going to grab it from here. 1.03 should work, but just to be safe, I'm going to install the previous version, just because I'm a little paranoid. All right. Microsoft.identity model.clients.activeDirectory. Oh, thank you. 1.0.2. Okay, then we need three files in here, which are located in lab files. We want the ADAL service authorizer, Active Directory Authentication Library service authorizer, and then a couple files that will help us cache credentials. Okay, so let's go into ADAL service authorizer and let's point it to our service. So first of all, our service is on expenses tech days. .azurewebsites.net. And the client ID is this. Okay. And then this is the code to actually go and get the authorization. And then the final thing that we want to do is go into the app file where we want to pass in to this expense repository. This is the code I was looking for. Okay. Oh, so maybe that code wasn't broken in the first place. I was just looking in the wrong place. Cool. Good. That makes me feel a lot better. So right now when we call the service, we're just passing the URL. What I need to add here is an instance of service authorizer. And then add private read-only string. It's not a string, is it? Nope. And it's not, doesn't need to be read-only. So I'm going to add an instance of service authorizer underscore service authorizer and then set that here. Okay, so when we create an instance of this repository class, pass not only the URL we want to talk to, but an instance of this service authorizer. Now when we come in here, we need to pass a new ADAL service authorizer. Let's build this. And I think that code I added somewhere else is, it was in here, right? Yeah. So let's take out that extraneous code that I was confused about. Okay, fine. Let's just leave it in there. I don't think it's going to hurt anybody. Okay, so now, fingers crossed, we fire this up. Unauthorized. And why is that? What did I not do correctly? Because I forgot to change this code. This returns the unauthorized service client, not the authorized version of the service client. So what I needed to do on page 42 is do this. There. So we're going to return, when we create a reference to this proxy class, we're going to return an authorized version of it, not the unauthorized version. Woohoo! Sign in to Azure Active Directory using this account and our temporary password, which is FUBA. FUBA 4572. Sign in. It says you need to change your password. FUBA 4572. We will create a new password. Tech Days Rocks. Submit. Tech Days Rocks. Oh, come on, they do too. They match in my head. Thank you. Ta-da! Granted, that code is not that easy. And even when you have it written down and tested over and over again, it's very easy to forget pieces of it. But the key thing is it works. And again, it's much easier to do with web API, so you can kind of decide whether you want to dive into the code to make it work with WCF. If that seems like an awful lot of work, you know, is it easier to set up a web API front end? I don't know. You know, you'll get to decide. But the thing is, it's not exactly intuitive code. It's certainly not the hardest code you've ever written. But it works. And so now what we have is this application moved into the cloud. The users can run this application on this machine, on their Surface Pro, any place where you can install a WPF application. And they can access this corporate data from anywhere, and it's authenticated. And if we really wanted to, we could take advantage of some of the cryptography APIs and, you know, apply that to the actual data that gets sent back and forth. But and for our purposes here, we're basically saying that once you can log in as who you are, that's good enough. We trust you, which is the way it works at work. You come into work, you log into your computer. If the computer believes you are who you are. Here, we're using the exact same Active Directory, exact same username and password as we would with our internal. Okay. So, you're not necessarily going to move all of your services to the cloud. Certainly this service, the one that gives you the ability to add and edit and submit and approve expense reports, that should be in the cloud. But let's say we have a service that's running internally, one that maybe sends emails or maybe writes to an internal database that isn't going into the cloud. What do we do about that? What we want is a way for the service in the cloud to talk to a service that's living internally. And for that, we can use the Azure Service Bus. So we're going to create a Service Bus Relay, add the Service Bus Relay endpoint to the internal service, and what that essentially does is it exposes that internal service to the external service. So you're basically opening up a port, if you will, for Azure to talk to this service, which obviously needs to be able to, you know, needs to be able to get out to the internet, of course. And then what we're going to do is update that WCF service to use the Service Bus Relay endpoint and point internal. So we're going to have our internal app talking to the external service, talks to the external data, but then talks back internally to an internal service. And for that, we're going to use the Service Bus. Okay, so we come to the Azure portal and we scroll down to Service Bus, and we're going to create a new Service Bus, which we will call Expenses techdays.servicebus.windows.net. We will locate it in North Europe. You always want to set the region as closest to you as possible. Okay. Sorry? West Europe. We're not in North Europe? Oops. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that geography lesson. And we just announced that we've got data centers in China, so we are adding additional ones. Okay, so this will activate the service bus and hopefully do it faster. There it is. Okay, so now what we're going to do is click connection information, because we need this default key. So we're going to copy that into Notepad, because we're going to need it in a second. Now what we need to do is go to our service that is not being moved to the cloud. Which is this one called internal service. Okay. And this internal service, it doesn't do anything, but that's okay. We just want to make sure we can call it. Okay, so now what we need is Azure Service Bus. So we're going to go to NuGet packages, look for Service Bus, and I want, so this is version 2.3.1. Again, it should work, but because I want to guarantee that everything works, I'm just being overly cautious. I'm going to do Windows Azure.ServiceBus, and I'm going to ask for version 2.2.1.0. Again, there's no reason to necessarily believe that this won't work, but just to be absolutely sure. Okay, then we go into web.config, and we're going to need to add an endpoint. Okay, so let's go into the code. This is on page 48. And this goes below the closing tag for service behaviors, which is right there. So we're going to add an endpoint behavior. All right. Right. Yep, that's fine. And we need to replace the key here with this. Okay. Then we need to add the endpoint itself. Transport client endpoint behavior exists. Good. All right. So then we add the endpoint within the service node. So we have the existing endpoint. We need to add another endpoint. And this is going to match the service bus we created, which is the wrong one. I've done this before in demos. I just copied the wrong one. Okay, come into the internal service. Use the correct key. And what was this called? Expenses, techdays.servicebus. That's our namespace. Expenses, techdays.servicebus.windows.net. Okay? All right, succeeded. Good. So now we've rigged up the internal service so that it can be talked to by the WCF service. Now we go back into the WCF service, and we want to configure that so that it can talk to the internal service. We also need that service bus package. So I'm just going to copy that from here. Package manager console. Let's install the same version of the service bus over here. Okay, that's successful. Now let's go into the web.config and wire this up. So again, we need an endpoint behavior, which is going to look like this, before service behaviors. So we'll add that here. And once again, we will need that default key, which is this. And I believe we also need to create the endpoint, which looks like this. And that goes after the behaviors. So we're going to create a client endpoint for expenses tech days.servicebus.windows.net. Okay? All right, so now we are going to republish this back to Azure. Okay, I always like to ask for the test page to make sure. Aha! What did I do wrong? I think this should be after service behaviors. Yes. And we do have, yeah, I think that's right. So now let's republish it. That's much better. Always check for that test page after you publish a web service. That will alert you to a lot of errors. All right, so now the final thing we need to do is go into the internal service. I'm going to put a breakpoint here. No, that's the interface. No, it's not. There's the code. I knew it was in here somewhere. There. Put a breakpoint there. And then let's run this to host it. We can use the test client. I suppose we could have viewed it in the browser, but let's run it this way. Good. And now, finally, let's go into the expenses app. Run the expenses app. And now when we approve an expense report, the WCF service is going to call into that internal service. Theoretically. Although it didn't look like it did. Oh well. Okay, well, I assume that I didn't mess up anything too greatly. Oh, duh. Nothing too greatly. The only thing that I neglected to do was actually write the code in the service that calls it. Okay. So in expenseservice.cs, save expense report? Right. Yeah, in the save expense report, right here, we were supposed to add code that actually called into that. Called into that internal service. Okay. That's the only reason that we didn't hit the breakpoint. Okay. I believe at this point, I don't think I had any approved expense reports left, unapproved expense reports. But at any rate, that's all I forgot to do. So the service works, the service bus works. I just forgot to add that code. So if you really want to see it work, we can go into the database, unapprove an expense report, and run it, but you'll take my word for it. Who here wants to see that, given that we're out of time? Who here believes me? Who doesn't care? Don't raise your hand. Okay, so here are some resources for this. There's some good Channel 9 videos, some good talks at Tech Ed, and of course, you have this in the conference code. You can also go get the Enterprise Dev Camp and work through this step by step. If you run into any questions at all, email me. Another thing we can do, let's just take a couple more minutes, is we've now taken this application and cloud-enabled it, but what we can also do is make it good-looking. And there are a number of great third-party controls for that. Let me just show you an example of that. So here's DevExpress. Let me just make sure that I get the initial version of this up and running. Because right now the WCF service is expecting authentication, and I want to run a version that doesn't. So let me come into here. Let me get a version of this that does not require authentication, like this one. And let's shut down any of these that are running. Let's clean up some space here. Okay, so this is a version of this that does not require authentication. Who's currently using this? Close that down. Okay. Dude, I'm busy. There we go. All right, so now, hold on a second. Speaking at Tech Days, we'll get back to you soon. Literally, speaking now. Okay, everybody say hi to John Peterson, my good friend. All right, so now, where were we? So let's run this application. So using tools like DevExpress, you can build, this is a WPF application that looks pretty modern, right? It's touch enabled. Yeah, there we go. So I can touch. It's interesting on a machine with a floppy to do touch. But I can do reports for approval. I can look at past reports. I can do a particular date, and I can go like this. So this is a really good-looking application. It's just a WPF app. So in addition to modernizing the applications in terms of moving them to the cloud, it's probably worth your time to modernize them, to look into modernizing them by using some of the third-party controls, DevExpress, Infogistics, Telerik, Component One, etc. Okay, and then the last thing that we can do is build versions of this that support Windows Store and Windows Phone. We're kind of out of time, but what we purposely did in this expenses application was we purposely used a lot of portable class libraries, including the repository and the model and the view model, so that it would make it easier for us to create versions of the Windows Store and Windows Phone versions of the app that call this expense repository and therefore call this authorized expense service client. And so we can, with a lot less code, write phone and store versions of the app that do the exact same authorization. And then presumably, once we figure out the code to do it, we could extend that to iOS and Android apps as well. Okay? So the big takeaway of this is that what we have done is we've essentially... Is there a summary? Nope. What we've essentially done is we've taken this existing WPF application, moved it to the cloud, and not had to change any of the internal application. The only thing we had to do in the application was add the code to do the authorization. Kept our existing investments, kept our existing application, made it so that we can easily add companion device applications to it. And so this idea of moving to devices and services is not at all rip and replace. It's not at all start from scratch. Absolutely all of your existing applications, whether they're WinForms, I mean, this code would have worked in WinForms as well because we just added C# code. WinForms or WPF, there's no reason that you can't take those applications and modernize them, move them into this devices and services world. It's not just for brand new applications that are aimed at the phone or aimed at the tablet. It's for all applications. All right. Thank you very much.